This episode is sponsored by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you know you're getting the real deal. Whether you're looking for a head-turning handbag, or a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear that make every step feel fly. These days, to know you're getting the real deal, go straight to eBay. When you're searching, just look for that blue check mark. It will say Authenticity Guarantee. That means when you buy it, you can be confident that it's authenticated by real experts. Listen, when you're finally ready to buy that thing you love, you have to make sure that you're not going to catch a fake. They're everywhere, and it's really tough to tell the difference for yourself. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, that's easy. So again, look for the blue check mark, and that way you know that when it hits your doorstep, not only do you know it's real, but that feeling that you get when you put it on is, well, also for real. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Welcome to Identity, a series brought to you by ID Magazine. Join me, Mahoro Seward, ID's Senior Fashion Features Editor, as I explore the enduring legacy of some of the last four decades' most influential subcultures and the guiding figures within them. Today, we're joined by the uncompromisingly avant-garde brand, DJ outfit, and Instagram account, Fecal Matter.
Our survival, like breathing for us, is being ourselves and expressing ourselves, and this is who we are.
I guess at this point, it's like, I can't not do this. If I wake up and don't put makeup on, I'm depressed.
Sometimes we're always targeted by just like, hate, and then we'll have like our post deleted even if there's nothing wrong. And also you also question like, if I look normal, like I could avoid all of this. But I think that's when we go back to what Hannah was just saying.
The identity is so strong, Blaina. Like it is so ingrained in what I do as a daily practice of self-love and of expression that nothing can get in my way.
Founded by Hannah Rose Dalton and Stephen Raj Bhaskaran in their final year as fashion students in Montreal, Fecal Matter is now one of the buzziest names in online fashion circles. Acclaimed for their radical design practice, anchored in conversations around sustainability, identity discourse, and transhumanism, they've also become known for their holistic embodiment of the values they preach, particularly through their extreme, otherworldly beauty looks. While the intensity of their aesthetic has riled conservative audiences, the pair have been warmly received by the fashion community, where they're regarded as upholders of fashion's intrinsic ethos of shameless self-expression. It's even earned them co-signs from the likes of Rick Owens and Michelle Lamy, fashion's most prolific proponents of all things underground. Here, we discuss the pair's journey of self-discovery and self-expression in Montreal, bringing their alien aesthetic to the everyday, the responsibility that they feel to open the door for the next generation, and being part of the Rick Owens family. Here's Hannah and Stephen, aka Fecal Matter. Let's, I guess, take it back to where you grew up in Montreal. I understand, did you meet at, were you at La Salle College, right?
Studying
fashion? Yeah.
Yeah, you digged.
How would you introduce or describe Montreal to like someone who has basically never heard of the place?
I would describe it as a really fantastic place to live if you are just wanting a family, a regular schmegular run-of-the-mill life without art or fashion involved. It can be a really amazing place and, you know, it can be open at times even and just a very like warm place. But I think for people that are wanting to express themselves or participate in fashion or the arts, it can be a really like life-sucking place where people don't take risks.
Well, maybe let's recontextualize it.
Sorry.
Hannah's going in.
Sorry.
No, but
I was trying to be nice at the beginning.
I mean, I think if you're interested in an extreme fashion and an extreme point of view and something that is confrontational or provoking or really outside of the box, Montreal isn't necessarily the place for you. For us, I guess it was, our experience was met with so much walls. Like there were so many walls against us to like actually express ourselves. So I guess we have some kind of like PTSD from all of that. But I mean, how I see it is, I mean, growing up there, because both of us, we grew up there. I think that it was a place to really experiment. It's a place to really have the opportunity to kind of like play around. Maybe it's not the place to present your work. Maybe it's not a place necessarily, you know, put stuff out there, but on your own, in your studio, at home, in your bedroom, whatever, you can really get immersed into the world you want to create, because there is a nothing really when you think about it. There isn't really a lot of spaces where you can necessarily get inspired. At least for us, it was hard. But with that being said, I think that the beauty of Montreal, at least for us, was really our family, our friends. You know, there's so much multiculturalism there. There's so much diversity. I think on that end, it was amazing. But I think, I guess me and Hannah, we always wanted more. And we always felt like we couldn't experience that because we were there. So yeah.
And I think part of the reason why we actually used Instagram and social media to our benefit was because we were in Montreal, being so isolated and so far away from the real action of the fashion industry and the art scene, was why we kind of went onto social media to express ourselves, to find our tribe. So,
and also remember, this was in 2013, 12. This is not, you know, now I think it's a lot different. I think, you know, especially when we go back, we see so much happening, and I'm really happy actually for young people there, because it's like there's actually spaces. And even mentioned Milan, like this was our teacher at the school that we went to. He was really the only person from that school at the time that was even paying attention what was actually happening fashion. You know, the other teachers and the other people, the community there, was they were paying attention what was happening locally, but not what was happening outside of those boxes that they were in. But he really helped guide us through kind of like the ideas and speculative design and all of these amazing, you know, kind of ways to express ourselves. So yeah.
And so could you tell us a little bit about how you two came across one another? What's the meet cute? What's the,
oh my,
the story there?
I mean, it really was like we really didn't like each other at the beginning.
as all good stories.
I mean, you have to remember we were both very different people on the exterior at that time. You know, I had long blonde hair. I, you know, had eyebrows. Okay. I would not dress like this. Like, I was like a Burberry girl. Like, it was a different scene.
Hannah looked really like church lady, like very conservative.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed.
Like, there's no skin, there is nothing. And you
look, I wouldn't even show my knees.
Hannah was also the teacher's pet. So that was Hannah. And I was still experimenting with gender at that time. And I was still kind of myself, but it was a very tamed version of who I am right now. And I was really, you know, especially, you know, coming from like a low income family and all of that, you know, I was living in a whole different area than like downtown Montreal. I was living in Montreal North, which was, you know, at the time and still is a very kind of dangerous place. And so for me, it was like, I, you know, even just wearing like a skirt with a suit, like a Yoji type of vibe, with stares and, you know, harassment, all of that. So I was like trying to navigate all of that. So when I met Hannah, I was definitely, I think, a little bit ahead of the self-expression side.
Yeah, for sure.
But then I remember I saw you wear this like choker necklace that was like a bone. What was it?
It was like a jaw I found, and I made a necklace out of it. But I'm wearing that with my church outfit.
With your church girl.
I was curious and I was interested, and especially since I was always late at school, I was kind of like, you know, I wasn't like the best in that retrospect. And so I was like, oh, let me befriend this person, because you seem like you actually would, you know, be able to give me notes and like help me. And, you know,
it's an awful beginning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit awful beginning. And then so I decided to like start a conversation, and I asked you if you ever did drugs before at the sewing lab. This was before the class started, so it was really just me and you. And I asked you, have you ever done drugs? And then you were like,
no, like, I don't do drugs. I don't drink alcohol. And then you were like, oh, like, I'm actually starting on my sober journey also. And I was like, okay, like, maybe we could, like, you know, be sober friends. Mm-hmm. And then started talking about why we were in the program. And for me, it was a lot about the child labor and the environmental impacts of fashion. Saying, oh, like, for me, it's actually, you know, the beauty standards And I don't see like people representing what, you know, your vision of beauty yeah. in the industry. So then, you know, we kind of became like inseparable because as humans, we had kind of a similar mission and a similar perspective on fashion. And even being in that program, I'd never met someone who, you know, had that same perspective. So mm-hmm.
We really became best friends, and slowly but surely, we really started to help each other kind of build our confidence to be who we are. And you know, because you gave me the outlet to actually push further in my expression. And I think I gave you the outlet to actually identify that, you know, you have so much that you're holding in that you want to release. And we both kind of became each other's like safe space to actually just mm-hmm. ourselves. And this is the first time that somebody was like telling me that I look beautiful if I wanted to wear heels or makeup or whatever. And I think on your end, I was the, you know, basically pushing you to like think outside of, you know, your background, because you were in a private school, you know, all girls school, all of that, very like Catholic, all of this type of stuff. So you had this like baggage that you were bringing. And I think we both kind of helped each other. And it was really the final project when we decided to work together for like our exit exam, which was you had to do it individually, but we asked the head director if we could do it together because we wanted to work together. And it was really that collection that our kind of perspective in fashion was able to be kind of developed, because we were trying to understand human nature and psychology and present that through a collection and really understand what it means to be human. And that was really the beginning of, yeah,
our working relationship.
Yeah.
And so when did your relationship sort of consolidate as Fecal Matter? When did that become the sort of, you know, the framework within which you sort of formalized that sort of collaborative relationship?
Mm-hmm. I mean, in Montreal, there was a like a fashion week kind of thing where it's just like in the main street during the summer. And we decided, oh, maybe we should show our exit exam that we worked on together at this presentation. So we were like, oh my God, what are we going to call it? Like, what is going to represent everything we're trying to say? And we actually went back to that original conversation at the sewing machines about how we felt about the industry. And we both kind of looked at each other and were like, this is like a shitty industry. You know, there's so much awful things that go on behind the beautiful images we see in magazines and all of that. There's a lot of shit going on. So how could we say that, but, you know, in a little nicer way? So we decided to say fecal matter because that's the scientific term for shit. And then we said, well, we can make that even more elegant by saying it in French. So then it became matière fecale. So that's really like the story behind it. And then through that, we kind of use that as, you know, like the cycle of life, you know, like, you know, creating something and then it kind of just like disintegrates and becomes shit. And through mm-hmm. that, using, you know, recycled materials. And so it represents what we're trying to say in the most polite way possible.
And then to go back to that presentation that we have to do for this festival thing. So the presentation happened and we were sitting watching it all unfold, and we noticed that they didn't. So when they titled it, they didn't title it Matière Fecale. They titled it my name, just Steven. That's correct. So after the presentation, we went up to them and we were like, why was it not Matière Fecale? And they were like, we can't put that. Like, that's like a joke, or that's like an insult. Like, that would offend people. And in that moment, I think that's when we realized that the name has some power to it, to be able to kind of present the values that, you know, we stand by, which is really freedom of expression and kind of just being yourself, and also in a confrontational way. So for us, it was actually like kind of the moment where we're like, okay, we're going to stick with the name, and this is what we are.
We're fighting for the name forever now.
And to be honest, everything else that unfolded afterwards, it was like, it took a really long time for people to actually even get behind the name. I think that was kind of the main thing that was getting in our way in the early years. But obviously now it's a little bit easier to digest.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I mean, just that anecdote about them, you know, you having your name censored at that presentation, because obviously a rally against censorship and like an active I guess, antagonism and desire to provoke these sort of boring or sort of strict social mores is something that's always been at the heart of your practice. And I guess your self-expression through beauty is a form in which that's extremely pronounced. Could we talk a little bit more about, you know, when it was that you first began to sort of experiment with your looks and the sort of conversations that you were having with each other around, you know, what it is that you wanted to do, but also what that meant to you and what you were achieving through that?
I mean, yeah, I definitely, I when you say that, I really go back to these kind of safe space we had with each other, because I grew up never having that. I grew up with a uniform every day. To me, I really cherished those moments we had together where we would just go to the thrift store and just like try on all the heels and just taking away all the rules that have been set up for us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was like before I met you, it was, you know, my environment, my family, I come from a Guyanese background. My dad is Sri Lankan. So there is like a whole kind of limit on even like self-expression. Like that wasn't even a thing. So for me, it was like, it was honestly, and then I was getting bullied so much every day as a kid. And for me, my safe space was really like my sketchbook and designing and kind of creating this world, this of imagination, of, you know, fashion, fantasy, whatever. But I never thought I could actually live that. I was always like, okay, like I can like present that one day in the late future in my life, but I can never actually become that. But it was really through Hannah, because, you know, we both fell in love with each other's perspective as designers, that we were also like, let's not wait to like put it on a model. Let's just put it on ourselves and just do it.
No, it's true. Sorry to cut you off. But on that note, I remember in school, you know, we're sketching and, you know, in class, you have to like say who your client potentially would be. And, you know, I'm like looking at Daphne Guinness and like what a Bjork and all these like people. And Stephen was like, well, why don't you just freaking wear it? Like you can wear it. You can pull it off. And
if we can't wear it, who will?
If
we can't actually do it ourselves, like who will? This imaginary person that doesn't exist. So it was really kind of...
So those were the type of conversations we were having.
But in terms of, to be honest, in terms of like on an everyday basis, it was so gradual. We weren't even aware what was happening. It was for fun. We were just living in our own little world. And, you know, I mean, in that moment, that's when we were noticing... Even within the fashion school, and to go back to LaSalle College, I think they've made a lot of amazing progress. But at the time, it was really hard for me specifically, because Hannah, we would be kind of in like matching looks sometimes. And they would be totally fine with Hannah being in it. And then my teachers would ask me to leave the classroom because I couldn't be in it. There was always this dialogue of having fun. But because our enjoyment was rubbing people the wrong way, it was very clear that we also had to like be serious about it and find a way to help people through kind of our work and our platform.
And not have other kids experience that at school, like how Stephen was explaining, you know what I mean? So.
And when did the decision come to set up your Instagram? Because obviously I understand it kind of served as like both a platform for your work, but also a platform for your self-expression and for sort of broadcasting your very kind of particular idea of beauty to the world. But, you know, to a global scale.
I mean, for us, it was, we were having fun. Me and Hannah, we'd go out and like do our thing. And like, that's when we were shaving our eyebrows and our heads. And we were just like, kind of really just like really full on embracing the vision that we had inside, but just like living it. And we were doing that solidly for maybe like two years. I think we were doing it on our own. And that was really kind of like our thing. And there's so many amazing looks that are not documented,
because
obviously it was like we weren't aware.
The lost archive.
Totally. So for us, it was when I think we realized that we needed to go on social media. Was part of it was because I think that we do need to find a way to make a living, because nobody in Montreal looks like us. Nobody in Montreal would buy the stuff that we're making. That's when we were, you know, researching and looking, and we're like, well, there's so many interesting people out there in the world. We can just connect with these people and present ourselves. And so we were getting inspired by like there's like kids in Chicago, there's kids in London, Paris, all whatever. And we were really inspired and we were like, okay, let's like also create a profile and do our thing. And I think that's when it slowly just started, where we were kind of just like really presenting ourselves and the clothes that we were wearing, but not in like a brand way or anything. It was literally just filming ourselves taking the bus and going to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. We were actually doing and calling it work, because that's what it was for us at that moment. Then that's when we connected our Depop shop. You know, a lot of people just do resell, so it's like vintage stuff, but we were putting out our actual designs. So all of that kind of just connected into this like world that we were creating. More than anything, we were trying to connect with others versus thinking that they would connect to us.
Well, it's so fascinating hearing that, you know, in those early days, a lot of the imagery that you were taking was sort of just going about your daily lives and your looks. Because I remember coming across your work in what, like 2017, 18, and seeing maybe like you in a supermarket or like you on the street. And I was like, what is this editorial? Like, where's this been published? Like, what is this? This is absolutely insane. But yeah, it's so interesting that like what was your just genuine expression of yourself through your clothing, kind of like in the context of it being tied to your brand, kind of like almost felt like a campaign, or like it kind of like had that sort of like editorial sensibility to it, but is in a sense like documentary at the same time. Like, it's interesting the way that that sort of like imagery resonated beyond the context in which it was created.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Mm-hmm. And I think also at that time, at the even now, I mean, a lot of the kids were doing it in their bedrooms. They were putting on looks or experimenting with gender, but they were in the confines of their room. And for us, it was really important to show that, hey, like, you could go out there and be that and mm-hmm. take that risk, and it's going to be worth it because you will feel freedom like you have never felt before. And I think showing that was also really always important. Like, you know, if we could do it, you could do it type of thing.
We'll be honest, like, maybe it would be a different story if we were doing it separately. Maybe we wouldn't have the courage mm-hmm. to do it on our own. You know what I mean?
But I didn't.
So I think because we had each other, mm-hmm. it was like we're both looking crazy. I may be taking the photos. Hannah's maybe taking photos of me. But it's like having this understanding. And I think that that's when we always felt protected, because we had each other. So we would like, even if people would stare and point or do whatever they're doing, we would just hold hands and go through it. And I think that that's where our like confidence became something that we can actually put out there, because I think that a lot of the kids that were doing it in their rooms or whatever, it was like doing amazing work. But I think that because it didn't have necessarily somebody to like mm-hmm. bounce mm-hmm. back.
Or have that security for sure, 100%.
This episode is sponsored by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. Maybe you're looking for a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear that make every step feel fly. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can be confident that real experts are making sure every inch, stitch, and logo is authentic. So next time, just look for that blue check mark that says Authenticity Guarantee. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. On the subject of your social media presence, you've obviously garnered a huge amount of praise and a vast following for your sort of unequivocal dedication to expressing yourself and sort of, you know, showing people that it is possible to kind of rally against these like staid, enforced, like heteropatriarchal norms. But at the same time, you've often spoken about the at times extreme backlash that you've received in doing so, particularly online. I mean, what's been your approach in dealing with that and kind of continuing to kind of do what you do in the face of such sort of animosity?
I guess at this point, it's like, I can't not do this.
Mm.
If I wake up and don't put makeup on, I'm depressed and I feel really negative, and like a inner saboteur comes out and kind of takes over Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
So even if there is all this animosity and there is walls that are put up because of our appearance or what we do or how much we provoke or all of this, the identity is so strong mm-hmm. that there is just no way. There is just no way.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other way to explain it. Like, it is so ingrained in what I do as a daily practice of self-love and of expression that nothing can get in my way.
It's like, you know, we'll post something and it's like, especially recently, you know, we'll have something that does really well, whether it's like a great moment, like a successful career moment or whatever. And if it does become popular, will attract these like conservative, like groups of Christian people that are like clicking
report,
and then we'll have like our post deleted even if there's nothing wrong. Post, we were literally just holding our friend's baby and people were like, this is satanic, this is da 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 da, and it's like, and then the post actually got deleted and it got it, you know, and it's like, so navigating the censorship.
Our Instagram too got deleted.
Got deleted so many times and we found a way to get it back. So sometimes we're always targeted by hate, and it sometimes does feel overwhelming, and it does sometimes, you know, feel really difficult. I think that for us, it's always been the online hate has never been as impactful as the real life hate that we go through on a daily basis. So maybe our point of view with, you know, the death threats and the this and the that, like maybe we see that as like a more distant kind of attack, whereas when we're, you know, literally physically attacked in Paris or whatever, whether it's like, you know, a group of kids or whatever, and it's like they're just like coming after us, it's like that's much more impactful to us, and that is something that obviously it hurts us. Like I mean recently I got attacked in Milan, and it definitely made me tremble for the rest of like the past 2 months. Like I'm like on edge sometimes, because it's like, you know, how much can a person take sometimes? Like and also you also question, like, if I look normal, like I could avoid all of this, you know what I mean? Like if I blended in, perhaps I could be able to avoid all of that. But I think that's when we go back to what Hannah was just saying, where it's like our survival, like breathing for us, is being ourselves and expressing ourselves. And this is who we are. To be honest, it's like, if I have to go through the things that I go through, if you have to go through the things that you go through to experience even like the glimpse of happiness through just like being ourselves, like it's worth it for us. For us, it's worth it. Everyone has a different boundary and all of that. I think for us, it is like balls to the wall. And I think we do go full on. We do attract a full on reaction, whether it's super positive or super negative. It always goes back to when we wake up in the morning and how we want to feel. And it feels so good being ourselves.
And it's been over 10 years of doing this now. Like it's not like I don't want to go back to Hannah before being sheltered and scared and afraid. Like it's the worst feeling. So I continue every day to fight. Like I wake up every day fighting for the freedom I have today, tomorrow.
Totally. And I think it's an especially important notion at a time where, I mean, what you've just said, Hannah, like fighting for your freedom today, tomorrow, is so pertinent, because I think that right now there is like a real threat towards those freedom, towards that freedom. There is like an encroaching conservatism. There is like a real backlash against like, or an attempt to encroach upon the right to sort of self-express, like, and self-determine. But I'm kind of curious to ask you then, do you feel a responsibility to represent other people so that they can also know that they can do the same? Like, do you feel that sense of responsibility to kind of do that and commit to continuing to present the way you do to kind of show people that they can?
100%. I think it's also in not only pushing open doors so the next person can come in easier or anything like that. I think it's also to do with how people respect you on the job, how they pay you on the job, how they're treating you. Because when you do look different or out of the norm, it's so easy for people to be like, oh, you'll do it for free.
You're lucky to be involved.
For us, it's like, no, like you have to treat us equally to what our worth is. And I think that is really important, because I also want the next person to be treated with the right pay.
I mean, we try our best. I think that that's what it comes down to. Like, we really try our best to stand our ground, because we see a bigger picture than just ourselves and our life. You know, we're very lucky to be in a position where, you know, we've gotten this far. And you know, when we think back of people like Lee Bowery, when you think back of, you know, whatever, you know, all of the amazing trans icons, and, you know, there's so many people in the past that if they had social media, if they had an audience that supported them to be able to give them some form of platform to be able to speak on the things they want to speak on, like, I think that all of them would be in a definitely a different situation. You know what I mean? So for us, it's really important to be able to understand where we are and what the impacts of our work, our career, whatever. But then on a personal level, it's like literally both of us like holding hands, walking around, just being ourselves, and then seeing like kids look at us and with smiles and, you know, this joy, and just seeing that like we are being ourselves, living our everyday life, but there's such a beauty that we can inspire people. You know, the world sometimes is such a limiting place for people that want to just be themselves or express themselves. And it's important to not be ashamed of who you are and to just like put it out there. And to be honest, we're not afraid of it. Like, you know, the whole imposter syndrome and all that, like there's no imposter. We want to be where we deserve it. And we want to be there, and we want to push the boundaries, and we want to stand for the values that we stand for. And we want to help people and help hopefully create some form of change. And especially like you just said, you know, the context that we're all in right now with the censorship, the backlash, the racism, the discrimination, all of that, it's at an all-time high. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's intense, you know, and especially living in Paris, in France, it's like,
yeah, I can imagine that's
it's aggressive. It's so aggressive. It's so scary. A lot of times, if we can showcase our vision of beauty and our love and, you know, our joy, I think that that's really the best thing we can do on a daily basis. And, you know, there's moments where, you know, especially with me, like I'm not in makeup. I'm just, you know, maybe in like my kiss boots or whatever and just doing my thing. And it's like, even that gets a crazy amount of reaction. So it's like, what it is that just standing out even a little bit, you're already put into the fire of like, you know what I mean? So it's like the gradients of the extremities, it's like, we're all in the same boat. Mm. Like whether someone just like dyes their hair blue, like that person and us is all in the same boat. Like we're all in it, you know?
But I mean, since you mentioned kiss boots, I think that obviously Rick is someone who really embodies, I think, that sort of like interesting duality that Paris does, that like, you know, while it is, you know, this kind of very old entrenched city, like quite an old world city in many respects, it is still a place where you do have like amazing things happening, and especially on the fashion front. And it's also a brand that you are quite strongly affiliated with. I mean, from being, you know, regular attendees at the show, some of the most notable figures on the front row, to obviously being in campaigns and walking the shows yourselves. I mean, how did you first become involved with Rick and the brand and the universe around it?
I mean, Rick has always been a love of ours as a designer before meeting him or being involved or anything. So even for my first like gift to you for Christmas, whatever, long time, 10, 12 years ago, was like a Rick nun hat, which we still have today. So, you know, and I spent all my money on that. But there's like an affinity for Rick's work because he has always been really futuristic. And I think as somebody who has studied pattern making, he always puts, you know, incredible pattern work and themes, and like he thinks about it more than just a dress. You know, there's a lot of design work that goes into
I respect. And then match with the community that he's, you know, fostered and, you know, the identities that he's put out on the runway. This world for us growing up was always something that inspired us and grows like, and to be honest, for us, what was like the most inspiring was to see that it goes down the line to even like how he lives. And that was like, wow, you can really create your world. You can really, you don't have to be limited to even just how you look. And, you know, you can like really create this atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So he was always someone that we were always inspired by, but we never thought we would ever be able to work with him or even meet him or anything. That was never on our radar. And then basically we had like a New York Times article that came out about like alien subculture beauty and all of that. And we were featured in it. And then I guess he saw that and then he emailed us. And he was like, basically just like, hey, we'd love to meet you guys. Would you guys like to come on the 31st of October for dinner?
No, he said, if you're ever in Paris, message. And we said, oh my God, we're coming next week for Halloween. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, come over for dinner.
Halloween with Rick Owens.
Yes.
So we went to dinner at his place.
I was like too embarrassed to like ask like, oh, is there going to be food? So we like ate at the hotel before going. And it was just like,
and then
such
he was
a
like,
mess.
What are you guys doing? And
like, why did you eat before? Like, of course there's food.
Yeah.
People, you never
yeah,
know.
Yeah, I was going to say fashion dinner.
Yeah.
Nibble a salad, a glass of water.
Yeah, and totally. So then we had dinner with him and Michelle and one of his friends, and it was really, really amazing. We got to show him all of our work and really get to know each other on like a friendly basis. And that was really where the talks of working together. So we did the soundtrack for the men's show. Mm-hmm. And then we were in the works of maybe doing something with like our skin boots and all of that. It became too expensive. So that didn't work out. And then really it was during the pandemic when, you know, as a young creator, it was impossible, you know, to survive. Like everybody was struggling and we were struggling. Most of our business was online. So we were already selling our pieces, our one of a kind stuff online. So the transition from, you know, the whole pandemic stuff was very smooth for us. But at the same time, we were in Montreal, we were depressed, things weren't going good. Mm-hmm. And then he reached out to do a filter for his Converse collab release, the first one. And then we sent him immediately the idea. I just drew like both of us as a pentagram that he does this, which is like mm-hmm. the logo he does for Dark Shadow. And then he came back to us like maybe a couple months later and was like, I want you guys to do the campaign and star in it and like shoot the whole thing and do the whole thing for the Converse thing. So that was honestly, that opportunity helped us actually move to Paris. That's what mm-hmm. gave us the capital to be able to come. It really changed our lives. I mean, it was a very controversial project because once again, the Christians like thought it was satanic.
With the pentagram and all. And like, you know.
Whereas we were getting like literally like debtthreats.com.ca.uk. Like it was like, we even messaged their team and we were like, this is getting a little absurd. Because also we're like quarantined. So we're all like already isolated. So
oh, wow.
Threats, people like being like, we know where you live and stuff like that. So it was like, it was scary. Yeah. I remember that time. Yeah. And then when we moved to Paris, it was really amazing. Because I mean, to be honest, we had a really solid friendship with Rick, and it was really like a, you know, we were already collaborating and doing stuff digitally and conversating and all of that. But it was honestly Michelle that really, really like took us under her wing and like really. So all of this like connection that we have with them is more than just like a brand with influencers or muses or whatever. It's really this connection of like we see life the same way and we're connected because we're also so isolated. There isn't a lot of people that understand each other, and we really understand them. They really understand us. It's been like a family for us, and honestly all the people that work there, everyone's just like, it's very family orientated. So we really love that because it really makes us feel like we can express ourselves fully through fashion. And I think that one of the things that, you know, they offer to us is so much inspiration that you can actually do it. Like you can be yourself unapologetically and find a space for yourself in this industry and represent the things you want to represent without compromise and make a living off of it. Right?
And remember, they're not owned by LVMH or Kering or none of that. Like, this is an independent company that is still at the top of the luxury market and making such a big impact.
And I guess a testament to that is, of course, that you just played at Michelle's birthday party in Venice, correct? Yes.
Queen. I mean, 80th birthday party couldn't have been any better.
I'm like, we need the full debrief. Like, what was the vibe? Who was there? Like, yeah. How was that experience?
It was very cool. It was in basically like a hangar, like at the airport of Lido. So there's Venice and then there's Lido. So Lido is actually where they have their own apartment and Rick spends a lot of time there. Michelle spends a lot of time there. And even during COVID, they did some of their fashion
the shows, right?
On the beach and all that stuff. So it's a big part of their world. And it was super cool because it was the Biennale at the same time. So you had a lot of interesting art people there. And yeah, Michelle asked us to DJ for her, which was obviously a pleasure.
Because we DJed for their Tokyo, which was honestly legendary. And it was like, I mean, it was the best party.
Nothing can match the Tokyo.
We've gone to so many parties. We've done everything, Berkheim, whatever, we've done it. We've never experienced something like that. Because this, what was so special about the Tokyo party, which they actually used the same recipe for the setup for the Venice one, was it wasn't just a party. It was like, it was how they created the atmosphere with the dancers, with the energy,
the
with
lights.
The lighting and, you know, the people,
the
and
fog,
the music,
of course.
The fog. And, you know, so it was just everywhere you looked, there's beauty. It was literally a sea of people in kiss boots and like head to toe Rick Owens and like, which was so cool and so amazing. We were definitely a little bit stressed going into it. But then, you know, when we put our music on, which is very hard, it's like hardcore techno, which, you know, it's not like house or like something that's a little bit more palatable. But we just started. And like, I think that at that point, everybody was already immersed into the world and into like the feeling of feeling safe and being themselves, that they were able to get released. And we had really an amazing time. And just seeing Michelle fist pumping to the hard music, to the crowd, was like next level. And Rick was dancing, lip syncing. It was just like pure joy, so much fun. All of these amazing creatures came out and they were just like doing their thing. That's so amazing that we can also contribute, you know, Rick and their world is already so open and so special, but I think us being a part of it also helps people push it a little bit further in terms of like accepting who they are and their bodies and just being themselves. Mm-hmm. So that was really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. I mean, my final question really is one that we ask everyone that we have on the podcast, given that subculture is its theme. Tell us, what is your definition of subculture? What does the term subculture mean to you?
Good question.
I mean, for us, I think that it means connection. I think that, you know, especially when we started, we were kind of isolated doing it ourselves, like seeing nobody that looks like us doing it and also feeling so together, but alone. To fast forward to like recently when we brought Hannah's mom to meet all of our friends in London, and we went to Sticks and Sushi, and it was super cute to see Hannah's mom with a sea of people that express themselves fully. And yeah, sure, a lot of it is blending into each other. You know, we all have a strong eye, or, you know, we're bald, or, you know, extreme looks or whatever. But there's so much individuality within that table. And ultimately, I think for us, it's really about connection. And as humans, we're searching for connection and we're trying to build a connection. And I think in the future, maybe that's going to be amazing if someone took a photo of all of us there, which we did, obviously. And maybe in like 50 years, people are going to look back at it and be like, oh, that's what it looked like to be like unapologetically queer or whatever in like 2024, whatever. Maybe that's how people are going to dissect it. But in the moment, for us, it was like, we're just with our family. We're just with the people we love. We're with the people that see us and don't judge us and let us be ourselves. So I think that that's really where the heart of the subcultures are. It's a connection. It's a human connection. I think when it becomes this bigger, larger than life thing, I think, you know, whether it's true fashion or true, you know, history or music or whatever, I think that that's where it's like, when I was like 11 years old, looking at like, you know, goth culture or whatever, that's when I'm getting inspired by those same people that probably just had like special intimate moments that were documented, you know what I mean? That helped me identify who I am and want to connect with those people and other people, you know, share that connection.
Yeah, well said.
Well, thank you so much, Stephen and Hannah, for your time. It was such a pleasure to speak with you.
Aw, it was so nice. Thank you for having us.
Thanks again to Hannah and Stephen for sharing their stories with us this week, and to the team who were instrumental in bringing Identity to life: researcher Ailey Duffy, producer Amelia Phillips, and audio production team Robin Lieburn and Simon Williams at Podmasters. Oh, and thanks to you for listening. Join us next week when we'll be speaking to designer of the moment and creative director of Mugler, Casey Cadwallader.